a footballing funeral in Malta, a shocking record in France. And as we prepare for the EFL playoffs, we've got two tips from Sam this week as he tries to get back on a winning run. All that and more on today's show. Hello and welcome to the Betting Expert Football Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Jenkins, joined as ever by Betting Expert's football editor, Sam Ingram. How you doing, man?
Hello, Dan. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. Enjoyed a little trip out to Serbia last week, a little time in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, very good. Very productive. It wasn't necessarily a jolly. We got a lot of work done and stuff, so that was good. And I'm back home now and it's sunny. Which is strange more than anything. Can't relate, no.
No. Just another rainy day in Southwest Wales. What have you got this week? Before I start and get into
my topics of the weekend, I just want to give a congratulations to Rail Bedford. We spoke about them on the pod a few weeks ago. Now pumped full of Winklevoss investment. Since then they drew 1-1 to Sawbridge Worth Town and then won 3-1 away at Cockfosters.
Huge
big result. So they're up as champions, so keep an eye on them for next season. Yeah, on the back of a $4.5 million investment, so congratulations to them. My first topic I wanted to touch on was Inter Milan over in Serie A. They won their 20th league title in their history. And in Italy, when you hit 10, 20, 30 league titles, you get to sew another star above your badge's crest on your shirt, which is pretty cool in itself. They beat AC Milan to rubber stamp the title. Their rivals, of course, who were also on 19 championships, tied with Inter Milan at the time. That win on the weekend would have been hell for AC Milan fans, seeing Hakan Calhanoglu, who left Inter Milan on a free transfer, which was labelled as a treacherous act by some in the city. He was holding a sign aloft on the pitch after the final whistle, which had like a big number 20 on it. And he was parading that round the pitch, grinning from ear to ear. So this was in the San Siro, but it was an AC Milan home match. So it was 65,000. Devout Milan fans were there, and in what have been seen described as front row seats to their own funeral, which I thought was quite funny. So currently Juventus has 3 stars, 36 championships, Inter Milan 2 stars with 20, and AC Milan now 1 star, 19 championships. However, depending on who you ask, there are some people out there who will tell you that this is Inter's 19th title and not, in fact, their 20th. So they were handed, Inter Milan were handed a Scudetto win during the Calciopoli scandal when Juventus was stripped of their league title in the early 2000s. But it was never proved that Juve actually violated the famous Article 6, which was illicit activities such as match fixing. And there are plenty of indications that Inter Milan were not as squeaky clean as the subsequent sanctions from Italy's governing body would leave you to believe. So the Juventus supporters coined this as the cardboard Scudetto, basically saying, like, you know, it's a fake championship. And I think AC Milan fans are on board with that too. So officially, Inter's 20th league title was won on the weekend. But again, I think that depends on who you ask.
Well, it's a great story, honestly. It's you can't imagine anything like that in the UK with the history of rivalries and, you know, United overtaking Liverpool in the Premier League and then Liverpool trying to get it back.
It's really scandalous, especially that Calciopoli story. Like, if you've not really dug into it, go and read an article on it. Like, the amount of wiretaps and what came out of those investigations, like, it's just crazy that even went on at the top flight in a big European league. It's just mental. But yeah, that's Italian football for you, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a great story, honestly. Everything just has a happy ending, like all the best ones do. So, bit of a change of pace, but I saw on Twitter this week there's a under 18 player for Arsenal's under 18 team. 16-year-old guy called Chido Obi, or Chido Obi Martin. I honestly, I don't know what his name is. I've seen about five different variations, ranging from Chido to Chido Obi to Obi Martin. Not a clue. I have to ask the guy himself. But he's 16 years old, only just turned 16, I think in November time. And he scored 7 goals in a game at the weekend against Norwich's under-18 side. Now, without being too harsh on... I don't know how Norwich City under-18s have been getting on this season, but from what I've read, they had a trialist playing centre-back. They had some players come in and out of the team with injuries playing as the other defender. They had a bit of a mare. Goalkeeper as well had a bit of a mare. But yeah, this guy, Chido Obi Martin, has become... He's just set a record as the most goals scored in an under-18 team for Arsenal's under-18 ever. He's currently on 28 goals for Arsenal's under-18 team in just 16 matches.
So that's big.
It's a decent return. 28.
Bags one.
Yeah, doing all right. He's the top scorer in the under-18 league in England now, despite only playing 2/3 of the matches. Coming to an EFL squad near you.
Yeah, is he on the brink of maybe appearing in the first team squad? Likely not in the team, but...
I mean, if you go back a couple of weeks and look at Arsenal's problem scoring goals, I think they probably would have just chucked him in. But not really got that problem at the moment. But...
If you're 16 years old, sorry, and you've got 28 goals in 16, then you're knocking on some kind of door. So yeah, fair play to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Pulling up trees. I think there's another guy who's about 14 who's playing for the under-18s as well. So
he's next.
Decent prospects. Yeah.
Right. Next up, Ligue 1 on the weekend. Both teams to score landed in each game of match day 31 of Ligue 1. That's a first in Ligue 1 since the fourth day of the 1976-77 season. Now, the weekend just gone, there was an average goals per game of 4.44, which is huge. And that scorelines including Rennes versus Brest 5-4, Clermont v Reims 4-1, PSG v Le Havre 3-3, and only one result, Nantes versus Montpellier, ended 1-1, and that's the only result that didn't oversee a 2.5 goals line win.
Letting the league down for that one, bloody hell.
Crazy weekend in France.
You just can't believe, what was it, 40 years, 50 years since the last time it had happened?
Nearly 50.
I don't know, I find that really hard to believe. That both teams score in every game, especially after the season we've had in the Premier League.
Yeah, well, what's the craziest thing is the average goals number, 4.44 in each game. Like, that's unheard of in these top leagues, anyway.
Bang the overs. So, over in Portugal, the Primeira Liga is having one of the tightest relegation races I can remember seeing. So, 3 games left for every team now, I think. And every single club between 18th and 8th can still get relegated. And the way the fixtures are going, the sort of direction of travel, it's looking like that's just going to keep going. There are a couple of sides at the bottom who have sort of fallen away, drifting away a little bit. But there's, yeah, about 5-6 points between 16th and 9th. So
that's crackers, isn't it? It's similar in the Championship, wasn't it, for a month or so?
Yeah. But this is, I mean, there's 3 games left, so it's all going to get sorted in the next couple of weeks. So definitely one to keep an eye on. I was looking yesterday, I couldn't get relegation odds because I don't think anybody fancies it.
Because everyone can get relegated.
Yeah.
Should we stay in Portugal, actually? I've got Victor Gyökeres jotted down. He scored 40 goals this season for Sporting, in addition to 14 assists. So he has 26 league goals in 29 league starts. A division of which Sporting is edging closer and closer to the Portuguese title. So they're probably one of the only teams that can't be relegated at the minute in that league. And I'd suggest he's probably going to get a Premier League move. But in my mind, like, seeing how good he was at Coventry and like his all-round gameplay, it was obvious he was going to go to a league, perform really well, and then be worth like 60, 70 million, something daft. It just begs the question, that players like this, players that have obvious like copious amounts of ability, should these Premier League teams just be buying them directly from the Championship and cut out the need to spend another 30-40 million? I mean, you could
There's not many doing it, is there? It's probably only West Ham that are doing it. They've signed players like Eze and Elise, haven't they, from Championship sides in recent years, and look at the potential value they've got in their hands with those two at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Palace have smashed it there. And I mean, that should be an indication to the other Premier League clubs that this can be done, if done correctly. It was just, like, to me, it was just so obvious Gyökeres was going to be a star. And I suppose the argument is that it's a bit of a risk. You know, they're not Premier League proven. The quality at that level is potentially unknown. But yeah, Gyökeres has gone to Portugal, absolutely smashed it. And he's done it in Europe as well, in the Europa League, which is a decent level, which is, yeah, could easily be translated to the Premier League. So I'd assume we'll see him in the top flight of England soon. Probably gets the move in the summer. He's a really good player, not just scoring goals, but his hold-up play, his movement off the ball. He's really quick, really clever. Yeah, great player. Great season.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of assists as well, isn't he? Definitely not just a goal scorer. He's linking up play with the rest of the team. What do you think his level is? If he was to go to a Premier League club, what do you think? How high at the table?
That's a really tough one, because I reckon you could put him into a Tottenham and he'd get loads of goals with the players around him, with the creativity behind him. But then again, equally, I think you could put him in like an Everton team, for example. And I think he's got the skill set to link midfield and to also get a fair few goals for them too. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him move to a club competing for Europe or competing in Europe in terms of like the Europa Conference League, etc. I'd expect him to land there, I think.
I think he's got West Ham written all over him. If Moisey was staying,
yeah,
he's got a total Moisey signing for me.
Yeah, I can see that. Antonio's on the way out, you'd say. So it's a good shout.
Could be one to watch. So moving over to Germany, and Bayer Leverkusen scored a last-minute equaliser at the weekend to keep their unbeaten streak going. They just keep getting these last-minute goals, Sam, don't they? It was who were they playing on the weekend? They came back. It was 2-1 in the end, wasn't it? 2-2.
It was 2-2. They were 2-0 down, because I wasn't keeping tabs on the game, but I saw a tweet saying Leverkusen's unbeaten run this season is about to end. And it was just a screenshot of like SofaScore or something. And it showed them 2-0 down in like maybe an hour gone.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, probably going to come back. You know, they have done all season long. And yeah, finished 2-2. Who are they playing?
Yeah. They were playing Stuttgart. They went 2-0 down, 2-0 down on the hour, and then scored 61st and then the 96th minute. And I had a look through them. They scored 15 goals after the 90th minute this season by Leverkusen. It's earned them 7 points in the Bundesliga table, though, just from those goals. Okay, they'd still be probably comfortably leading and would comfortably win the title still, but they had one in the cup. They had two. They earned 2 points from a last-minute winner in the Europa League group stage. And in the knockouts, they had 3 goals after the 90th minute in their two-legged tie versus Karabag. One versus West Ham. It's a never say die spirit, isn't it? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And this unbeaten run spans to Europe as well, doesn't it? And I'd assume, I don't think it's ever been done for a team to go unbeaten in the league and in Europe. So if they win the Europa League and go unbeaten in the Bundesliga, then it's a pretty special season for Xabi Alonso's by Leverkusen.
Good ask. Sam, that unbeaten treble that they're on for, because they're still in the cup as well, aren't they?
Unbeaten treble. I'm certain that's never been done before.
Is that the best
at that level?
Is that the greatest single season a football club has ever had? Especially considering Bayern's dominance in Bundesliga in the Bundesliga for so long. How difficult? How long Leverkusen have gone without winning a trophy?
Yeah, potentially, Dan. Yeah, I'm not one of them that subscribes to like Liga and Bundesliga being like farmers leagues and leagues you should look down on in terms of competition. So yeah, maybe that's really impressive. Like to go for a whole season in the league alone, undefeated, like the Invincibles in the Premier League, really, really, really impressive. But then to stretch that out to cup competitions and in Europe whilst juggling, you know, domestic football and winning the lot there. yeah, I don't think we'll ever see that again if they do it this season.
Yeah, unbelievable. Good luck to them, as far as I'm concerned.
Definitely. It's nice to see, I'm not that bothered, but it's nice to see Bayern knocked off their perch, even if it is just for a season as well. Nice to see an underdog kind of sticking the red out of the sand. Yeah, anyway, definitely. Next. Kevin De Bruyne scores a lot of goals. Very good player. He scored his first headed Premier League goal at the weekend versus Brighton to open the scoring at the Amex. City were brilliant that day. Really, really good. But yeah, I was shocked that this was the first with his nut, Dan. 68 Premier League goals. One with his head. He's got 45 with his right foot, 22 with his left. But yeah, just the one with his head. And did you see the goal?
I did. It was an unbelievable header. It was like a lobbing header, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was majestic. He's like took flight, connected, and it looks like he scores them every week. It was that good. It was brilliant.
That hair just like flowing in the breeze, wasn't it?
It looked brilliant.
Made a good picture. So I was looking into this, Sam. Who do you think is the player who scored the most Premier League goals without scoring a header? They scored 54 goals in total. Not playing anymore.
Without scoring a header?
Yeah.
I have no idea, Dan. Mate. Should I have a guess?
It's Damien Duff.
Damien Duff? Oh, yeah, fair. I can see that. Yeah, he's quite a small chap, isn't he?
Yeah, something about these fair-headed kind of attacking players who just don't want to get their head on it. Him and De Bruyne.
There you go. Maybe someone in that.
Someone in it. So I was looking at change of pace, moving down to League Two and Forest Green Rovers, who've just been relegated. I was reading a really good piece in The Athletic. That Forest Green have now had back-to-back relegations, and Oliver Kay had a really good breakdown in The Athletic. And it's just got me thinking about the club and the project. It's one that's been very united, I think, moving in a single direction for a long time, and success has followed. Anyone who doesn't know, I think most people know by now, but Forest Green Rovers, the greenest club in the world, self-titled, the first kind of carbon neutral football club. I think they got certification, didn't they, from the UN for that. Got that fully vegan menu. And for a long time, it was progressive politics and progressive football with Rob Edwards at the helm, now with Luton Town. But I think they've kind of lost their way, haven't they, Forest Green? They seem to have, lots changed. You know, Troy Deeney coming in, changing the style of football. They just seem to lose any sort of trajectory and any sort of momentum that they've done so well. And people are going to have their opinions on Forest Green Rovers and what they represent, whether it's kind of a vanity project or, you know, a bunch of do-gooders. I'm not sure what you think about them, Sam, but there's going to be people who I think we're going to blame these relegations on the vegan menu and the shirts that are made out of recycled coffee grounds. But I mean, it could be that. It could just be that they've made some pretty rotten footballing decisions, haven't they, in the last couple of years.
It could be, but like following their promotion, it's been a high level of player turnover. Yeah, like you said, there's been a few different managerial changes in the dugout. And yeah, that's obviously attributed to their downfall. And it's probably that more so than the vegan menu and stuff. But I personally really like the way they're approaching it. I mean, it's not Dale Vince has pumped a shed load of money into it. It's not exactly like a Cinderella story.
Yeah.
And I can kind of understand why people think, you know, the club and Dale Vince maybe are coming at things on their high horse and whatever it may be. But me personally, yeah, I mean, more football clubs should be carbon neutral. More football clubs should be doing things sustainably in the right way. So I'm not really too bothered by them in that respect. It's just a shame to see them, you know, put in such a poor season and go down the way they have, because they have been dreadful this season. And yeah, it's going to take a lot for them to get out of the National League. As we know, it's a really tough league to get out of. So not
back to back consecutive bottom places as well. So finished bottom in League One last year, bottom in League Two this year, which is rough. But I was watching a good documentary that Borussia Dortmund put out. So Borussia Dortmund went to visit, sent a delegation from the club to go and visit Forest Green towards the end of last year. I think it was November time. Put out a really, it's only about a 15 minute long documentary.
Not to study their training techniques or anything, I'm guessing.
Well, the way Dortmund have gone the second half of the season, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe,
yeah. But no, it's just to sort of investigate how they do things, how the sustainability runs. I think Dortmund are looking to go a similar way. I think they've got a load of solar panels on the roof of the stadium, and they're looking to kind of greenify the stadium on a match day. But yeah, I thought it was quite interesting. And for Forest Green now, I think the most interesting time of this project is what happens next, because they've had so much momentum for the last few years. This is the first time they've had real setbacks, and going down to the National League, difficult play, as you say, difficult place to get out of and get back into the Football League. So all eyes on them. I think it'll be interesting to see whether they keep the philosophy going or look to change things up.
Yeah, I'd say they really struggle. Don't think they'll come up automatically, that's for sure. Maybe playoffs, but it's going to be a tough one.
Yeah.
Next, a little bit further down the divisions, we're going lower and lower to the Jersey Bulls, which isn't a dodgy sounding NBA or wannabe NBA team in America. It's actually a club in the combined counties Premier Division. They were formed in 2018, so they've not been around for too long. Now, in their first season, they notched up 27 consecutive wins in the league and had a points total of 81, pretty much mathematically promoted. They would have needed to be like a wild turn of events for them not to be. COVID came and curtailed promotion hopes. Despite their position, an unbelievable season, Jersey Bulls would not be promoted. The league was null and void. Brutal, obviously. Next season comes, they dust themselves down and they're unbeaten from August through to the following year. Again, the FA announces that all leagues from step 3 to 7 would be sacked off, derailing another title charge. Anyway, fast forward to current day, and now, after a promotion, thanks to a restructuring of the leagues down there, Jersey Bulls are in the playoffs and they face off against AFC Croydon, which is owned by Wilfred Zaha and Stormzy. So they play them on Saturday. Jersey Bulls, as you could imagine, they're in a difficult position in terms of location. Obviously, every team in the division has to fly to play them. Jersey has to fund each team's travel to the island. So every weekend for them is like an away day, which is unheard of. The finances involved in that must be astronomical at that level, but you know, they crack on. And as a rule, Jersey can't play any home games during the week because of the effect it'll have on the away team's players having to fly to the island. And this, by the way, is in a season, we've spoke about it a lot, where the likes of Plymouth Parkway and Truro, they can play about 5 games in 7 days. And you know, the FA deems that as fine. But yeah, interestingly, Jersey Bull confirmed their playoff position this season against Hawley Town. That was a match that had to be rescheduled from the 16th of March to a weekend in April because EasyJet refused to allow any more than 4 of Hawley's first team players on board at London Gatwick. EasyJet deemed their kit bags were too big. They allowed 4 players on board, but refused the rest, even though their bags were all the same sizes. So yeah, that's just an odd little quirk, which would have never, you know, cropped up in any other team's games. And there's been plenty of stories of like travel delays for Jersey Bulls. For example, in the COVID season, their game against Farnham saw their flight delayed by 2 hours. And then followed up by that, there was a hold up in traffic. It meant their 12:30 kickoff had to be delayed by an hour, with Jersey Bulls arriving at 1:27, 3 minutes before kickoff. So basically, they've kitted up, they've run off the bus straight onto the pitch to play the game. And I've got a quote from the Jersey Bulls director, Ian Horswell, after the game, which they won 2-0, saying, "The lads have been fantastic. They literally ran from the main road here at Farnham, down a lane, onto the pitch, all kitted up in their boots. Straight onto the pitch, the referee blew the whistle and away we went. There was no time for a warm-up and there's been no time for a shower." That is proper non-league. it's not something which they complain about either. They knew what they were signing up for, but it feels like they have to jump through a few more hoops than most, and that's maybe like fully invested with their season and their current playoff push. And we'll update you on next week's podcast on how they get on against Croydon in the playoff semi, but I'm hoping they get the win.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't fancy that trip on like a Wednesday night or something if I was one of the players.
No, definitely not.
Not ideal. They want to get those bags from Amazon, you know, the ones that just fit perfectly in there.
Yeah, yeah,
ideal. On the seat. Maybe next time. So, change of pace, right? But after the North London derby on the weekend, Ange Postecoglou was full of praise for Christian Romero, who scored Spurs' first goal, but he was praising his mentality. Postecoglou said, outstanding, World Cup winner mentality. I've got to get what's in him into some of the others, end quote. So how do you do that, Sam? How do you get that mentality, that sort of the fire into the rest of that Spurs team? How do you do it? It's a genuine question.
I don't know. Get some new players in, maybe.
Maybe. Or you just go over to our old friend Football Manager and change the stats of every Spurs player to match those of Christian Romero and just see what happens. So that's...
Right, okay. That's an option, yeah.
That is another option. That's exactly what KJ Taylor did on Twitter.
I love a fantastic thread. I love things like this. I've not seen it. Go on.
Brilliant. So the Romero 11, they all had the names changed, but they kind of kept their first names. So it was kind of Brennan Romero and Hyungmin Romero.
Brilliant.
They did quite well. Hyungmin, I think he was the top scorer in the end up front for them. But as you can imagine, things got a bit feisty. Yeah. Overall in the season, there were 23 red cards for Tottenham. but they actually did all right. So,
Where they finished? Eighth.
Finished eighth overall. And... Okay. Due to some coefficient changes, they managed to sneak into the Conference League.
Oh, nice.
Not bad. I mean, the 23 red cards probably makes it quite difficult. You can't really rely on playing with 9 or 10 players every single match. But
no, that's not ideal. How did the actual Romero get on that season? Solid season?
I think he did all right. I think he scored his first goal. He's got a winning goal later on in the season, but... I mean, he's probably just looking around a team of clones, isn't he? He's not enjoying himself. But,
I love that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Whilst we're on the topic of Football Manager, Dan, what's your greatest ever achievement on there? Are you a Football Manager type of guy?
I'm like in FM Anonymous, so I used to play a lot and I've just stopped completely because I know...
Yeah, I'm exactly
like,
the same.
If I start, it's not going to be productive for my life.
Yeah.
But
same.
I think... The highlights, probably Burton Albion. I had one of those when they were in League Two, I think.
Okay.
Got them up kind of competing for Europe. I always struggled to get over that. You get into the European spots, hard to get into that top four back in the day.
Yeah, it's really tough. My biggest achievement was I took Bath City to the Champions League.
Nice.
Couldn't win. Yeah, fucking big achievement. Couldn't win the Champions League, but... the top scorer that season in the Champions League was a Bath City forward. I forgot his name. That's going to annoy me. But yeah, greatest ever FM achievement. What a game.
It's weird. You have some players you see in real life, then you feel like you've got a personal connection to them. And it kind of affects how I see people. So I've got a loathing for Phil Jagielka because I was doing an Everton save online. And he was an important player for me that he ruptured his ACL. So he was out for 9 months. And then was working through the rehab. But then he said, all right, I'm back in 6 months, but I'm going to retire in 5 months. And I'm not going to change my mind at all. And I'm like, Phil. So every time I see him, just popping a blood vessel, bringing it all back. I'm not a fan.
Scumbag. Right, away from computer games. I assume you've heard the big news from Mota, Dan.
Can't say that I have, no.
Okay. So FC Valletta, they've been relegated for the first time in their 118-year history. So that means that the microstate of Malta will be without a capital club in their top flight next term. So Malta will be the only one of UEFA's 55 member countries without a capital club in the 2024-25 season, which is fairly interesting. So I looked into that a little bit and I saw a few tweets. That dug a little bit deeper into FC Valletta themselves. So their club and supporters are known for a funeral parade where, when they've won the league in the past, FC Valletta's fans, they used to go on a march through Malta, or, you know, whereabouts they're from in Malta. They used to hold up caskets representing the other runner-up teams in the Maltese Premier League. Who couldn't quite match them in terms of winning the title. And I've seen a few pictures. They're literally holding these things up. People like donned in fancy dress, look like comparison, you know, like the Day of the Dead in Mexico. It looked like that kind of vibe. Really odd. I saw another tweet. It said, this relegation this season for FC Valletta, it's seen as karma by a lot of the other supporters across Malta. And I saw a tweet saying, what goes around comes around, with a little picture of someone holding up their casket, which, yeah, crackers.
Love to see that in the Premier League. Just,
yeah, imagine
all the Man
that.
City fans strolling down with like a big...
Yeah, Bruno Fernandes in a casket.
On to Sam's bets for this week. And as ever, we'll start with a look back at last week. And Sam, again, difficult one. Last few weeks of the season, and you just... tailing off a little bit with the form.
Tough one
win,
two
losses for you.
Well, I'm pretty sure last week I said it's taking the Blackpool bet first off. But I'm really confident that we're not going to get a full stakes loser, because I think Blackpool will be able to get, you know, at least a draw. And they went 1-0 up after 4 minutes. So yeah, I was buzzing with that. And then gradually, obviously, they tailed off, and Reading scored three and then conceded one right at the end. So that ended 3-2. Really poor from Blackpool.
Disappointing one, that.
Really disappointing. No playoffs for them. And I said on the pod, like, if you don't get some kind of result at Reading in this kind of game, in this kind of game state, then you don't deserve playoffs. So that didn't happen. The other game was...
Fulham versus Crystal Palace, over 2.75 goals, finish 1-1.
Yes.
Absolute wonder goal. Did you see the highlights of that one?
I didn't actually, no. Didn't see the highlights. Oof. No,
absolutely
didn't see the
wonder
goals.
Goal from Jeffrey Shullup. Honestly, have a look if you get a chance. Fantastic strike. Unfortunately, it only counted for one, so another loss there. Mm-hmm. And then MK Dons versus Sutton, Sam, another over 2.75 goals. You didn't fancy the over 7.5, did you?
Yeah, I should have. That ended 4-4. Yeah, that was obviously the easiest bet of the week. Fulham Palace is a little bit annoying. It was a decent goal line. I actually drifted in to an over 2.5 line, which was interesting. Yeah. The other two prices, the Blackpool and the over 2.75 in MK Dons, they both closed really well for us, but we just couldn't get the result over the line. So... Yeah, another one of those weeks. Moving on to this week, hopefully we can get a couple of winners on the board.
Yeah, I think it's crossed. Yeah, that MK Dons line went up to about 3.25, didn't it, just before kickoff? I was looking. And yeah, with good reason. I think there were a couple of goals disallowed as well in that 8-goal classic. But
yeah. Look, you can only do much. You take what lines you think are value, and if you keep doing that consistently, and the prices and lines keep going in your favor, then at the end of the season you're gonna be you should really be profiting. So it's it's one of them. Moving on to this week, I actually found it really difficult to pick a bet from Saturday's games. We've got one in League Two, a playoff game on Monday, and the first one is in the Premier League, but I struggled a little bit in terms of the scheduling and what I fancied. So the first bet is Sheffield United versus Nottingham Forest. I've gone for both teams to score and Forest to get the win at Bramall Lane. That's at 2-1, 3.00, and I'm going to be playing that with a half a unit stake.
Okay.
Yeah, not my most confident bet, but at those prices, I don't mind it. So Forest have to win this one, really, looking at their schedule. If they get a win here and move away from Luton, that's going to do them wonders in terms of the prospect of staying up in the Premier League. And I know they're right down there with them, but Forest are a much better team than Sheffield United. Forest played well against Manchester City. They were unlucky to be behind at halftime. On another day, Chris Wood takes a couple of his chances. Murillo is a little sharper in the box, and they head into halftime. A couple of goals up. In the expected goal stakes, Forest led by 1.27 XG to City's 0.29 XG at halftime. So it just shows like they were dominant in that respect going into halftime. But instead, City took the lead from a Gvardiol header and they doubled it in the second half. That's what they do. It's no disgrace from Forest's point of view, but they'll be a touch frustrated that they couldn't capitalise on those chances. And I think on another day, maybe against lesser opposition, they really rack up a few goals there and definitely get the 3 points. It's just one of those things. It's what happens when playing City.
Really poor misses from Chris Wood. That one in the first half. Yeah.
And one really similar one in the second half as well. I don't know.
Salanga, wasn't it? Coming down the left.
Maybe like a bit too slow to react to both on his heels a little bit and kind of just drags both a bit wide. But yeah, look, it happens. And I think they'll be afforded similar chances on Saturday. They may not be in front of home support at the City Ground, which is where they play the best football, but I feel there's more than enough in an attacking sense in that side that edges them in front of what Sheffield United can muster. But saying that, with the shackles off and like they have done in 11 of 17 home games this season, I'd back Sheffield United to get on the score sheet. They've got nothing to lose versus a Forest side trying to fend off relegation, 1 point away from Luton. We've seen the discourse around the club during this week. Chris Wilder wants to stay on at the club next season. He's said as much. A run of decent performances will do him the world of good behind the scenes. They're not going to down tools, but at the same time, they don't quite have the quality to match a lot of these Premier League teams. And I think Forest fit into that category. I believe they're strides away from the Blades at the minute in that respect. They've spent a lot of money. They've got quality all over the park and they should be able to get the job done here if they turn up and they're correct and they take those kind of chances that Chris Wood spurned on the weekend. Looking at the markets at 1.65, sorry, on the nose, I wouldn't back them in the 1x2 market. The inclusion of both teams to score, though, that gets that 1.65 price right up to 3.00. And both clubs this season, they're running at around a 60% both teams to score strike rate, which is about average for the Premier League this season, which is bonkers in itself in a really goal-heavy campaign. But yeah, I still think 60%. It's a sizable figure with what's on the line for Forest. They should get a goal. Sheffield United with the shackles off, fancy them too as well. I just would expect that maybe Forest edged the encounter on the day.
Okay. It's going to be such an important weekend at the bottom of the table, isn't it? You've got Luton versus Everton on Friday night. So, I mean, if Luton can get something from that game at Kenilworth Road, which you probably fancy them too, considering Everton's safety has been secured for another season, that will pile the pressure on Forest and make them want to go. Just make them open up because they'll know they'll need to win to keep their noses in front of Luton.
Yeah, massively. And what I would say is if you think that's maybe a little bit risky and you want to be a bit more conservative, you could do both teams to score and Forest double chance, win or draw. And I think that comes out at 1.83, which I did look at for the pod, but I thought we'd just go with a bigger price and see what happens. But yeah, like you said, really, really important game. So should be good viewing in the Premier League this weekend.
Yeah, these two teams are very much out of form, though. I think if you look over 8 games, like over 10 games, these two are in the bottom three for form, whichever kind of time span you look at it. I think it's 6 points from their last 10 for Nottingham Forest. And yeah, as you said, it did make a couple of decent chances against City at the weekend. So, but didn't really look like taking them, I don't think. So would you say this bet is more about them or about Sheffield United?
A bit of both, really. Like, we know how poor Sheffield United can be when they're having an off day. And I just think there's enough in that Nottingham Forest team in forward areas to beat them. And yeah, like we said, on another day, Chris Wood gets a brace. Murillo gets one. Maybe there's another one that flies in from Gibbs White or whatever. And Forest beat City fairly comfortably, which, you know, doesn't usually happen. So yeah, if they can approach the game on the weekend with a similar like approach, and they really turn up as they did against City, then I think they should get the job done. It's a pretty good price, really.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a pretty good price. I think they've been struggling for goals, haven't they, Forest? They've scored 17 away from home. Only Everton and their opponents here, Sheffield United, have scored fewer away from home with 16. But going to Bramall Lane, to a place where Sheffield United have conceded 51 times in 17 yes. matches, they'll That's have to feel pretty confident that they can get something in the back of the neck here. So yeah, that is,
say so.
You'd hope so. So that is both teams to score and Forest to beat Sheffield United. That's a 3.0. Sam's going for just a half unit on that one. Moving on to your second tip of the day, and it's Crewe versus Doncaster.
Yes, in the League 2 playoff semi-final first leg, we're going to go Doncaster 0.0 Asian handicap. That's at 1.825 on Bet365, and we're going to play this for a 1.5 unit stake. So still we're gonna have 2 units out on the podcast this week, but just split a little differently. This Doncaster outfit is the only side with momentum in the League Two playoffs. They've timed it perfectly. They were 22nd in January. They couldn't get a run together then. They were hampered by injuries and poor form, but Grant McCann is a really good coach, and honestly, he's probably too good for the division. If Doncaster don't go up, then I wouldn't be surprised if there's a side or two sniffing around for his services next season. If the League Two campaign started from the 1st of February until the final day, Doncaster are top. 13 wins out of 18, 7 points ahead of Wrexham, 41 goals in said 18 games, and just the one loss. Like, momentum is really there. Momentum is in their camp. And in the other camp, in Crewe's final couple months in League Two, it's been a stark contrast to what they served up previously. They were scoring goals freely in the opening stages of the campaign. Now, if you look at League Two, let's say from March the 1st this time until the final day, 12 matches played for most. Some teams played 13. Crewe were second from bottom out of 24 teams. They'd won twice out of those 12 games. They lost 6 and scored 7 goals in 12 games. They were also beaten by Forest Green at home 3-0. A Forest Green team who we've spoken about already, who were relegated and finished 9 places above Crewe in this League 2 table from March the 1st. So we've got a team absolutely flying against a team crawling towards the playoffs and limping over the line, relying on their earlier season form and for other results to go their way in the season's closing stages. So they weren't caught instead of them, you know, putting a run together and kind of rubber stamping playoffs themselves. So with the draw returning full stakes, Dan, I'm happy to take a punt on the away side. The playoffs in the English Football League are often quite hard to call, but I think this time round, away from home, I think maybe both teams would be happy with a draw, and if that happens, we'll get our money back. But I think, well, definitely momentum and form is in the away dressing room.
Okay. No, I mean, it looks great on paper, and honestly, that form, the discrepancy between the form of the two teams is absolutely amazing, considering it's a playoff game.
Yeah, it's huge. You don't usually get that. Like, Crewe should be nowhere near the playoffs if you're just taking, you know, the last few months as a sample.
That's the problem.
On the whole, obviously.
Competition now.
Yeah, obviously they deserve to be there. But in terms of, you know, recent form, there's only one winner. But it doesn't always work out that way, especially in the League Two playoffs. So we shall see. But yeah.
Just to play devil's advocate a little bit, Sam, this is a fixture that Crewe won 3-2 at Cresty Road back in November. Obviously now a completely different competition. It's a chance for Crewe to just draw a line under their form. The last 12 games don't really matter. They're in the playoffs. Get a result here. And the fact that it's a two-legged knockout, so if they can get something from this result, get a result from this match, that really sets them up well. And doesn't matter how many games Doncaster have won in the last couple of months, they lose this one. Mm-hmm. It's all to play for. Do you think in a little bit?
Yeah, you bang on. And that's what the Crewe manager's definitely going to be saying to them all week in training. That's what he's going to be harping on about in the dressing room before kickoff. But it's one thing saying, let's draw a line under, you know, this competition. Let's go into the next competition and give our all and play this way. And and react completely differently to how we have been in the previous, you know, 10, 15 games. It's easy to say that, but to actually get a team to kind of switch up how they've been playing, increase confidence levels, be braver on the ball, find that killer pass, find the back of the net when the opportunities arise, it's a lot more difficult to do that realistically on the pitch. So yeah, that's how crew will be looking at this, and that's what the noises will be coming out of the club. But to actually do that on the pitch against a team like Doncaster, who don't need that kind of pep talk in the dressing room, who it's just a case of go out there and do what you've been doing, they're going to find it tough, crew. And they may well get the win. They may well nick a 1-0 or a 2-1, wherever it may be. But looking at previous form and how they're really faltering in front of goal, while they're really struggling to create too much of note against teams that are way off playoffs, I think they're going to struggle. That's why I like the fact that we can get full stakes back in the event of a draw. And yeah, let's hope Lady Luck's on our side and it goes in the direction of the away team.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it. So just to recap, Sam's gone for Nottingham Forest to beat Sheffield United and both teams to score in the game with a half unit. That's a 3.0 odds on Bet365. The other bet is from the League Two playoffs, and Sam's gone for Doncaster +0 on the Asian handicap market against Crewe. That's a 1.825. So, Sam, mix up the units a little bit this week, which you don't normally do. Not as confident on the... Is it a confidence thing, or is it just to do with the odds?
Well, it's not necessarily a confidence thing. I suppose the odds plays into it, and I was just looking at the schedule, and I really didn't like most of the games. Obviously, it's Championship final day. Usually, I'm all over that, and I will be as the week progresses, but we're recording this on a Tuesday, a little bit earlier than usual. Mm. And the type of markets I want in the Championship, they're not out yet. So I'm going to be leaning heavily on like corners and maybe team shots, player shots, things like that. But just in terms of like the Asians and the goal lines, there's nothing really for me to put up right now. I liked Hull away at Plymouth Argyle. I like Hull to, they need a win. I like them to get the job done there. They're just over evens. But it's final day, Argyle looking to stay up. So that's not going to be as easy as that price suggests. Maybe there's not too much value in that price, so I left it. We've got a Championship relegation hinging on the final day. We've gone for Plymouth Argyle. And I think the only way they don't get relegated on the final day is if Birmingham lose at home to Norwich. So I don't think Plymouth are going to beat Hull. So it is in their hands, but I don't think that's going to happen. So it's all on Birmingham. If Birmingham win, I think we'll win our relegation punt. If they lose, then yeah, Birmingham down. So keep an eye on that. Obviously, that's something to keep an eye on in terms of podcast bets. But yeah,
it's just gonna say it comes back to the bet you made on 20th of March with 5.0 odds, wasn't it? So just a half a stake on that, so we'll finally get a conclusion on the weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good end to the Championship. There's a lot to play for at both ends still, which, yeah, brilliant. Should be good viewing.
As there always is this time of the year. So let's leave it there. As ever, if you're going to be using some of the tips from the show, then please gamble responsibly, only betting what you can afford to lose. If you have any spare time, please leave us a review on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, because it does help so much with our visibility. Let's wrap it up. Thanks as ever to Sam Ingram.
Thank you very much.
And thank you from me. We'll be back next week.